All right, there we go. Good morning and hello. I'm Rick Moore along with Josh Arnold. This is Trending Now on MSO News Sports. And before we get started, before I even go to Josh and our producer and engineer, of course, is Bill Proposky, I have to let people know that, you know, we do have a live music fest coming up on Sunday. Greg Verga's Unfinished Music will be broadcast on MSO News Sports. But I have to let people know that it's going to be a late start. Apparently, our venue was overbooked, and we found that out last night. And so that's going to present, you got this all over there. That's going to present a little bit of a problem, so we're probably not going to be able to get started till around 5 o'clock on Sunday instead of 4 o'clock. So those of you who are planning to get there early, you don't really need to. There's another event going on. This will be at Mile Marker on off of 133 heading into Gloucester, Mile Marker 1. And so instead of starting at 4, hopefully we'll be starting around 5. There's another event going on that we didn't know about. We just found out about last night. So that's a little bit of a setback, I guess. But I think people who go to concerts are sometimes used to seeing their favorite band start a little bit late or whatever. So we'll all have that. We will have that on Sunday, but it's going to be a little bit of a late start. Instead of 4 o'clock, it's going to be 5 o'clock. Okay, let's welcome in Josh Arnold. And Josh, what do you have planned for today?
Well, today we have Joseph Gigoloni, who is a candidate for Ward 2 City Councilor in Gloucester. Cheryl Ryan Chan, who is a principal facilitator with Person-Centered Planning Partners, is our next guest. Joseph Orlando Jr., candidate for re-election to the City Council in Gloucester. And Joel Favazzer, candidate for re-election to the School Committee in Gloucester, will be our fourth guest.
All right, sounds good. We'll get right to that in just a minute. This is MSONewsSports.com, and this is Trending Now with Josh Arnold.
Score early and often this fall with a low-rate residential loan from the Institution for Savings. The Institution for Savings has fantastic rates, low or no fees, great service, and prompt turnaround. Plus, we service our mortgages in-house, so help is always a local phone call away. For more information or to apply online 24/7, visit institutionforsavingsloans.com or call us at 978-462-2344. Institution for Savings, member FDIC and DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're thinking of replacing the windows in your home, you should look at the Anderson Woodwright double hung insert window, which comes with rich wood interiors in oak, pine, or maple. Quite simply, Anderson is the most trusted window in America. That's why we've been selling them for 57 years. Please see the Anderson Woodwright windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up. Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our first guest is Joseph Gigoloni, a candidate for Ward 2 City Councilor, son of former longtime City Councilor, the late John Gigoloni. And it's also your birthday. Happy birthday.
Thank you, Josh.
So we usually start out, tell us, give us a 3 or 4 minute bio, tell us about yourself, and then we get into some questions about the campaign.
Thank you for mentioning my dad was a 14-year member of the city council.
I worked with your father. He'd come down from heaven and kick me in the butt if I didn't mention him. Back in the day when I was in the 8th grade, I worked at Coastal Tire and Appliance, and he worked there. And I've known him longer than I've known you.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but I'll take it.
Yeah. Looking at the campaign and I guess I know you ran last time at large. What motivated you to run for city council this time, and why Ward 2? What was the difference in making that decision?
Successful, but
Good.
I've stayed involved. Shortly after that election, I sat down with the mayor and I asked her to appoint me to the Downtown Development Commission, which she did. I've since been elected to be the chair of the commission. I've also gotten involved in the Democratic City Committee, where I've been elected to be the Ward 2 chair for that committee. I try to stay involved and try to stay on top of relevant topics in the city and in the ward. I frequently go to city council meetings. I participate in public hearings and try to be at all the events that I can be at. And again, I think a lot of that was instilled with my dad, and we've been a politically active family and a politically aware family, I guess, too. State Rep. Ann Margaret Ferranti is my cousin, so we're just one big, happy, want-to-be-involved family.
Well, I suspect if somebody marries a Republican, there's going to be some really interesting Thanksgiving dinners there. But anyway, let me look at the marijuana law. The marijuana law passed allowing recreational use of marijuana in Massachusetts, and yet it's still there are federal laws that define what can happen related to that sale. So if you're banks, for example, are not likely to do transactions with companies that are selling marijuana because of federal laws. That creates some interesting issues and dialogue for what happens at the city level. So the question really is, how is that law impacted, from your viewpoint, how is that law impacted what happens at the city level in terms of zoning, permitting, and enforcement, other issues?
Everything that you said, zoning, permitting, enforcement, this issue has recently been in the forefront because, as you probably know, the city council had ward meetings throughout the city on this very subject about recreational marijuana sales. And I was surprised at what I learned going to these meetings because there's just a wealth of things that we don't know. And we're still waiting for the state to give guidance on because they still don't know. They still haven't come up with, how we should go about doing this and what the rules and the laws are going to be. So, I mean, the smart thing that I think is where the city is going to go is to have a moratorium on sales until we get better information and better guidance from the state. But as you say, this is going to affect, all kinds of aspects. As it stands right now, the state is going to put a 20% tax on sales of marijuana, and only 3% of that goes to the city. To me, that's insane with all the issues that we're going to have to deal with. 3% is a drop in the bucket.
Okay, great. What there's a ordinance on the book somewhere in the book of ordinances that says, Section 2.7 says there should be a student government day in Gloucester. And I remember doing this as a kid. You got to be the mayor for the day or the city clerk for the day. You shadow the people. And it was a good introduction to government. The city council, the student city council has passed, would have their own city council meeting, the school committee, et cetera. But we don't do that anymore. What are your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think absolutely we should have that. It didn't occur to me until preparing for your interview that we hadn't done this in a while. I've never been involved in it and for myself. One thing I can relate to it, though, when I was in college, I went to the Harvard Model United Nations. And it's a similar thing. It's a mock United Nations, and you go through the committees and all that kind of thing. But it gives you a sense of how your government works.
Yeah,
I think that's important for the student government day. Maybe these kids aren't going to go into politics or run for office, but it gives them, this is how things in your community work. This is what the people you see do. It's not just, that's the mayor. She's in charge of the city. Well, you get to see how multifaceted her responsibilities are, what the city council does, what they have to deal with on a daily basis. And again, you may come away with it and say, I'm not ever going to go near politics or whatever, but you learn about your community and how things work.
Well, yeah, and when they did it before, the mayor or the city manager would appoint the police chief, the fire chief. There's a whole slew of department heads, so you rode around with the police chief and the fire chief. So it wasn't just government. I mean, it wasn't just elective office. It was a slew of appointed positions, and they had one of these at this for state student government days. People get to be governors, state reps, and senators. And I was the commissioner of banks one year back when I was a kid. So it is a lot of fun. I didn't go into banking, but it was a good day in Boston. But the looking, what do you think of the? The Book of Ordinances is a interesting book to a certain extent. It's like the house that Jack built, I think. There's a lot of stuff in there that we don't do anymore, but it's still on the books. And, it's not like it might be similar to the blue laws. You can't buy a loaf of bread on Sunday kind of thing.
Right.
But if you look at the there's 46 different reports that people are supposed to generate, either annually, semi-annually, quarterly, monthly, whatever, and either send to the mayor, send to the council, send to the state. How do you streamline government to be doing what you're supposed to do or what, and get rid of some of the stuff, trim back some of the dead wood here to fix this?
Right. I think it's important that happen. I don't think that this is a job that the city council is going to undertake on its own. I think what the process should be is to convene a charter commission.
Yep.
Or charter review. I think that's they're more able to handle. I mean, like you said, there's 46 different reports. So who knows, do they get done? Do we need to do them? And they'll be able to sift through them and say, well, there's three reports here that overlap. Should we have one report, or is it even necessary? And, they would be able to help streamline all these reports and such.
Good. All right. Flipping through here, the city council, to a certain extent, in a strong mayoral form of government, is a check and balance people wrote the charter, they drafted the charter, they wanted the executive functions of the city to be vested in a publicly elected person. And they have that in the mayor. But they made the city council to be a check and balance so that, the mayor proposes the budget, the city council has to approve it. The mayor proposes department heads, the city council has to confirm them. So there's a check and balance there. And that creates or can create a certain friction, if you will, and some of it's by design, some of it may be personality driven. How helpful is that? Do you see it as a friction based environment, and how should it work in your view as a person who wants to be on the city council?
Well, I think, as you said, by design, it's supposed to cause some tension, not animosity, but I'll give you an example. The city council proposed their tax classification not too long back. And
yep.
The mayor vetoed it. And instead of it being a big, mudslinging contest, they sat together, they came to a compromise and passed it. That's how it should work.
Okay. Good. Let's see what we're doing for time here. We're out of time.
Okay.
But I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Wish you the very best of success in your upcoming campaign, and hope you have a wonderful continuation of your birthday today.
Thank you, Josh. It was my pleasure to be with you this morning.
Thanks, Joe. Take care.
You too.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up. Harrington's Trophy and Awards has been rewarding the North Shore for over 25 years. Hi, I'm Kevin Harrington.
And I am Marty Harrington, and we are known for our local family business, providing custom trophies, plaques, screen printing, embroidery, and much more. We offer a variety of services such as engraving wedding gifts, medals for charity walks, youth sports trophies and uniforms. From the newest style performance wear to your everyday work shirts, we are your one-stop shop. Whether it's a fantasy football, warm-up suits for your team, end-of-the-year banquet gifts, or recognizing excellence, we pride our business on our exceptional customer service and quality products. Located in Lynn, or visit our website at harringtontrophy.com.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill. At the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan, plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is Cheryl Ryan Chan, who is a principal facilitator for an organization called Person-Centered Planning Partners. Cheryl, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much for having me, Josh.
Cheryl, will you start out with, give us your 3 or 4 minute bio or extended version of that, and then we can get to some questions about the work you do.
Sure. So, first of all, again, thank you for having me. My name is Cheryl Ryan Chan. I live out in the central Massachusetts area and have been out here since about 1999 when my husband, daughter, son, and I moved out here from central New York area. And when we moved here, our son was about 4 years old and had been diagnosed a couple years earlier with autism spectrum disorder. He is pretty severely impacted, and when we moved into the Massachusetts area, we knew that we were going to need a lot of family supports and system supports. So with that, we immediately got on board with the Central Mass Autism community through the Autism Resource Center of Central Massachusetts at the time. And we started getting highly involved in that community. Over the years, I took on different roles as a volunteer, as a fundraising person. Eventually, I started working professionally in the industry doing marketing and social media consultation. But all along, my family was being supported as well because of our son and his needs. And so we were deeply invested in the community. With that, I developed a relationship with another nonprofit called Autism Housing Pathways, led by my colleague, Catherine Boylan. Kathy invited me to become involved in a project that she had going where we would go up to Toronto, Canada, and learn about something called person-centered planning. We did that several years ago and learned about this methodology that really just captured my attention and became my passion. And so over the last few years, I have been working with Kathy and developing my own nonprofit to do person-centered planning for folks with disabilities and other populations. And it has now become a program, as you said, called Person-Centered Planning Partners. And that's where I have turned all of my attention and focus. So my son is now almost 25 years old and is doing very, very well. And we now have the opportunity to really kind of expand and support the disability community in doing person-centered planning.
Now, the training that you had in Toronto was... they talked about methodologies that were used, and when I talked with you earlier before the radio show, I was interested to know if the methodologies applied only to children or children, adults with special needs, or whether you were learning things and your background now includes things that help people in other situations transition, most notably elders, would what you do apply to people who are transitioning from, you know, one stage of life to another?
Absolutely. There are multiple ways that person-centered planning methodologies can be applied. And so you can really cast the net pretty wide and say these methodologies, these tools can be applied to anyone who's really looking into the future at any kind of life transition. So that can absolutely include things around the disability world, people coming in or out of adult services, people coming in or out of mental health support, the elderly, people who are getting married, people who are getting divorced. That's the great thing about this methodology is that it really can be applied. Although the origins of person-centered planning really do start with the disability community. It goes back to the 70s or so when social justice leaders, educators, and human service workers were supporting people coming out of institutions. And while that was going on, what they were finding was while it was a wonderful human accomplishment and achievement that we were pulling these folks out of these horrific institutionalized settings, we were actually putting them into their communities, into what really looked like smaller versions of those institutions, and no one was supporting or stewarding the humanity of these folks. So that's where person-centered planning came into play. But again, these methodologies can really be applied to any person who is looking at a life transition and also is looking for or is going to need any sort of systems-level support.
So if I understand the process correctly, when you're working with a client or clients, part of what you do is to get to know them and to help build a goal structure? Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We do come in and speak with clients about, you know, what it is that their goal is, what their vision is for their future, and what that looks like. And then the rest of the methodology or the rest of the procedures that we use involve pulling out tools from our toolbox to help them take what is typically a system-centered transition plan and make it into something that starts with and honors throughout the process their own goals and dreams and visions. Right now, we're living in a society where the system supports take precedence over who the person is, and so we look instead at first and foremost at how much it's going to cost to support them, where the available spaces are, and you know what kind of supported or sheltered program has space for them, as opposed to starting with who is this person? What are the gifts and contributions that they can make to their community? How can we support them in developing a vision that is both positive and possible and keeps their quality of life and dignity of life intact?
So, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the older model or the older version of how people were treated was somewhat of a top-down model, and there was a one size or one or two sizes fits all kind of thing, and what you're doing is more individualized and catered to the individual needs of a diverse population. Is that right?
Yeah, I think that's pretty fair to say. You know, we've come a long, long way since institutionalization, for sure. And we are, now in a place where more and more the kind of person-centeredness of system support is coming into play and is being recognized. We still have a long way to go. What person-centered planning does is it brings forward the formulas, the methodologies, and the tools to help families and system supports, caregivers, really make sure that the person's, again, own dreams and desires are being considered throughout the process. So, yeah, we've come a long way. We still have a long way to go.
Person-centered planning as a concept is kind of a hot topic of late. You see it in news articles, and people are talking about it, but at the same time, it's new. And so to a certain extent, the challenges that you and others like you face is selling the concept and then selling the services, or is that right?
Yeah, yeah, it is. You know, the funny thing is I hear a lot about how it's new and people are talking about it now. But as I started questioning that and I went back to some of the leadership that I've been honored to meet, and, you know, the truth is it's really not that new. It kind of trends. There was a time back in the early 90s in Massachusetts when it was kind of trending. A lot of it has to do with the leadership, you know, within the systems, at the state level and at the federal level, and who's talking about it and what kind of prioritization they're giving it. So it's not new, but it is talking, you know, it is something that's being rapidly adopted across the state and across the country right now. So, it's that, which is a very exciting thing. Hopefully that trend will continue because it really does change lives and really does make a difference.
Great. Now, you do, as part of your role, you're a blogger, and you also do webinars. Could you tell us a little bit about that? And I know you have a website that, if you want to read it to the listening audience, that they might want to look at that.
Yeah, thank you. It's www.personcenteredplanning.com. That's my website. And I have been doing a lot of presentations. More recently, I really started realizing that to be able to capture everyone's, you know, and provide the information that's necessary for people to start to understand what person-centered planning is, I was going to have to do more online stuff. So there is a presentation library on my website where I provide recorded webinars of things that I've done, teaching families, teaching educators, talking about the essential elements about person-centered planning. Because as we talked about before in preparing for today, one of the things I said was I realized very quickly when I started doing this that I needed to take a step back and educate people on what person-centered planning actually is, because there's a lot of misinformation, but that means because of the confusion over the different kinds of methodologies that exist. So I'm educating people first to help them understand the importance of person-centered planning, and I do that on my website. I do it regularly all over the state. I go to workshops and conferences and do presentations, and that schedule is also on my website at personcenteredplanning.com.
We've got about a minute and a half left. What else would you like to share with our listeners?
Well, you know, one of the most essential elements of person-centered planning is something called the circle of support. And that involves identifying and or creating relationships that can be sustainable throughout a person's life. And we all have them, unfortunately, for people with disabilities in particular. It takes more time and effort to build authentic, natural circles of support within communities, but it is really essential, in part because caregivers of people with disabilities often feel isolated, they're terrified of the future, we feel like our loved ones are going to be left with no one to love them when we're gone, nor one to watch out and steward their humanity. But it really doesn't have to be that way. So person-centered planning can help guide families and caregivers in developing not just plans, but the means to foster those kinds of authentic relationships that will steward the humanity of those they love well past the time that we're gone. So I want to emphasize that circles of support and natural relationships are a key element to person-centered planning. And if they are absent, largely absent with the person that we're planning for, then that can become part of the plan. So, you know, my message is to caregivers, if you're feeling like you are without any support, consider just exploring my website. I do all sorts of consultation by phone, just for free. Let's have that conversation. Let me help you understand, you know, this essential element and perhaps, you know, guide you in what person-centered planning can do to support your person.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold, and I wish you the best of success going forward with your organization.
Thank you so much, Josh. You have a great day.
Take care now.
The Gloucester House Restaurant at historic Seven Seas Wharf, 63 Rogers Street, Gloucester. This is owner Lenny Linquata.
We provide service and product better than anybody else. It comes directly from our boats right to your plate. We have fishermen that work great for us. We are wholesalers that we buy what we want to serve to our customers, and we put the rest of it right out in the market.
The Gloucester House Restaurant. Visit thegloucesterhouse.com.
This is the freshest seafood you can get from our boats to your plate.
The Institution for Savings has always believed in giving back to our communities because our communities are such great places to live and work. Last year alone, we donated and pledged more than $3.9 million to local nonprofits, including local hospitals, schools, food pantries, art organizations, and more. Named one of Boston Business Journal's top philanthropic companies, we are proud to be your local hometown bank. InstitutionForSavings.com. Member FDIC, DIF, Equal Housing Lender.
Many aspects of estate planning are interrelated, and you can turn to attorney Bob Andruga for full-service estate planning to help you develop a comprehensive plan in providing for your future. Bob will work with you through the years to adapt your plan as needed, and he can assist you with managing wills, trust, probate, and taxes. Visit the law offices of Robert J. Andruga at 128 Main Street, Gloucester, or call today for an appointment at 978-283-6883.
Welcome back to Trending Now with Josh Arnold. Our next guest is City Councilor at Large in Gloucester, Joseph Orlando, who's running for re-election. Joe, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
Well, we usually start out with give me a 3 or 4 minute bio, and then we can get into some questions.
Sure. Gloucester, born and raised, 33 years old in a couple days. And
another birthday boy. We had the first guest was the first guest. Gigoloni's birthday is today, so you guys were classmates, maybe.
No, Joe's a little bit older than me.
Okay.
I think.
All right.
You know, I graduated from Gloucester High in 2003.
Okay.
Where I met my wife Jamie, who was Jamie Aiello, and now she's Jamie Orlando, and we have two little boys, Joey and Rocky. One's almost 3 years old. The other one's just about 9 months. And I went to Endicott College and Massachusetts School of Law, and I work as a personal injury attorney at my father's firm, Orlando & Associates. So that's a little bit of background about me. Hope that covers it.
Great. Wanted to ask you about some recent legislation that ordinances that have been passed by the City Council. One is sponsored by you on affordable housing, and another one sponsored by Sean Nolan about private road repair. Can you share with us a little bit about those?
Sure thing. Yeah, these are both actually pretty significant issues facing us right now. Gloucester, being an old community, and especially in the outskirt wards, you know, the Magnolia, West Gloucester area, and the Lanesville and Annisquam, Riverdale area, and in the East Gloucester area, you get a lot of private roads. And one of the big issues facing our entire community has been a lack of, or at least a perceived lack of, affordable housing available. So let's start with affordable housing. I proposed a new ordinance, basically brand new legislation, on a way to take existing multifamily units. Okay, so if you have an existing multifamily house with multiple units, to provide incentives for a property owner to deed restrict one of those or two of those units to be affordable housing. And that those deed restrictions are a state thing. The state says this is what the rent has to be set at for this many bedrooms and this many square feet and the like, and then that it has to be available to somebody of a certain amount of compensation that they make as an employee or an income. So it's income-based and it's state-mandated through a deed restriction on the property based on that unit. So the idea is we provide the incentive for a landlord to take one of their already existing units that may need some kind of zoning relief or some kind of permitting relief. We provide that relief to them so long as they deed restrict the unit affordable and they bring it up to all the necessary health and safety codes. So what we're doing is we're adding to the affordable housing stock. We're taking basically an untapped resource and using it to serve our existing Gloucester residents who need a place to go, you know, who want to stay here but who may be otherwise be priced out. So in that way, it's a great mechanism for increasing our affordable housing stock.
When you say, in exchange for, they will, by deed restricting it for a certain population, they need to bring their facility up to code in all areas. Is that what is the check and balance to, one, make sure that happens, and is there a piece in there that makes sure that they maintain that?
Sure. So the check and balance on making sure they do what they're supposed to be doing is that in order to get the relief, we put into place a very streamlined process that only requires one meeting in front of the ZBA. Just one. There's no, you know, right now, if you want to get an existing unit that you have that is, you know, needs permitting relief or zoning relief for any number of reasons, you're going to at least three meetings. It could be one with the planning board and the city council or the zoning board of appeals. And then, you know, there could also be appeal hearings and the like. We've sort of eliminated a lot of that. There's still a public hearing in front of the ZBA, but that's all you have to do. Okay. So what you do is there's going to be a checklist of things that you'll need. You're going to have certifications from the building department that there's been no complaints in the past 5 years on the property. Has to be an already existing unit, so people already know about it, somebody already living there. You have to certify that someone's been living there. You have to have a certificate of rental dwelling from the health department. So there's all sorts of things that you need paperwork-wise to bring with you in order to be entitled to get this relief, but it's very simple. We've outlined it very simply, and if you have those things, that's the check and balance to make sure it's a safe unit for the person to live in. That's the number one priority, is making sure that the unit is safe and affordable.
I ask that because I years ago when we did work with St. Vincent de Paul, you'd go around and try to bring help people out, and some of the conditions of the properties were, you know, you could put a marble on the floor and it would roll. I mean, it was like a 30-degree slope, and you know, I said to the head of the St. Vincent de Paul, gee, why don't you call a building inspector? And he said, well, if you did that, they'd be out on the street. So, you know, I'm glad that you're taking steps to make sure that that it brings up the quality of the living environment for the people that are served by it. Tell us a little bit about...
It's important to note that, you know, the city did a study and came out with a housing production plan about what we need for housing, different needs within the next, 20 or so years. And one of those needs, or two of those needs, were safe housing, more safe housing, and more affordable housing, among other types of housing. We also need market rate housing as well. There's a lot of different types of housing that we need. But those two goals were met with my ordinance, and the council, I'm very happy to report, passed 9-0. They all agreed that it's a good idea and that we should be moving forward with it. So it's for now a 3-year window for real estate owners, multifamily property owners, landlords to come forward and get these units permitted and variance granted and get the units deed restricted. But hopefully, if it works, we can extend it.
Tell me a little bit about the road ordinance that Sean Nolan sponsored.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Sean did a great job with this. I can't speak highly enough about Sean as a ward counselor. He's the best. He's a great guy. You know, we have great ward counselors in the city. You know, Steve LeBlanc's great as well, and Val Gilman. These people do a lot of the hardest work, the ward counselors, as well as Melissa and Scott Memhart. They do a lot of the hard work, and at-large counselors get it a little bit easier than they do because they deal with more constituent services. But Sean has spent the last, I think, year trying to improve and really kind of replace our existing private road betterment ordinance. So we had an ordinance in place that required far too many moving parts, far too many city officials to weigh in, and it the process just took forever. Myself and Scott Memhart did a betterment project over there in East Gloucester early on in my time as a city councilor, and I could tell you the old ordinance was just, it was very confusing. It was a lot of questions, a lot of unanswered questions.
That the Oxford really, Road area?
I'm Starknot Road, correct.
Yeah, okay.
Starknot Heights.
Yeah.
So there was four private roads up there that the neighborhood all, for the most part, wanted to get repaved. And, it was a heck of a time trying to get it done. But
One of the problems that comes up, as I understand it, is that, you know, you know, we live in an era where we have macadamized cow paths. So there's a need to look at the road and say, okay, this is where the road goes, but where was the road supposed to go? And what is it? There was a lot of hollering after one of the hurricanes in the last century. Makes it sound like a long time ago, but when Charlie DeRosa was the DPW guy director for Bill Rafter, you know, there was some question about, you know, when they redid the back shore, they fixed it so it wouldn't, you know, break apart when we had a bad storm, but there was always some question about, was the land the city's land, or was the land belonged to some of the residents there? And that's an ongoing issue, I have to think, with all the roads in Gloucester, right?
I tell you, yes, it is a significant issue, and, you know, that was one of the issues we had up on Stark Knot Heights, is that there's actually a section of a road that went over one of the neighbor's private property, so it became very difficult to try to figure out how to pave it. But long story short, I mean, Sean's ordinance streamlined that whole process. It now requires more neighbor agreement. So before, you needed a simple majority of the neighborhood of the abutters on the street to get a betterment project done. Now it's required 75%. There's fewer meetings necessary. There's just less to do for the neighbors to get this process done. You know, one of the things that we all find frustrating is when we go through some process with City Hall, that it's meeting after meeting after meeting, and there's really there hasn't been much in the way of guidance about what to do. Well, Sean solved a lot of those problems with his private road ordinance, and that's a huge, huge issue for his ward and others. I'm very, very happy to say that, you know, the council passed that 9-0 as well, and that we won't have to go through the same thing myself and Scott Memhard went through on Stark Knot Heights ever again. quite the battle.
Years ago, I used the analogy before, back in the school committee days, that they had a policy committee, and it was like watching Wagon Train. Every week there was an episode, but it was never clear that they got anywhere. And 23 meetings, and they changed three policies. But anyway, we got a few minutes left. I did want to weigh in on one. And when I was in high school, way back when, long before you were born, they had a thing called Student Government Day. And kids ran for office, mayor. Of course, in those days, it was the other form of government. It was Plan E form of government. So you had a city manager that was appointed. But kids applied, and had a day to shadow a city councilor, a school board member, a mayor, a city manager, a city clerk, the police chief. And it was a good introduction to civics or understanding how the government worked. The ordinance is still on the books, but we don't do it. And I'm wondering, you know, what it would take to revitalize that, if that's something you support, or what do you think about that?
Absolutely something I'd support. And I'd absolutely love to have a high school student shadow and learn what a city councilor does if they wanted to. And I could certainly help with that. I think the best way to accomplish it would be to bring it to the mayor. I'm sure she'll be very receptive to it. She's always been very receptive to having students be involved. I know she's had young children do mayor for the day and things like that. I think it's really important. Local government is you know what they say, all politics is local, right? So
yeah.
Local government affects you the most every single day, and it's important for a high school student, especially who's really coming of age, to learn you know, about local government, and that's something we can do. So I think if one of us counselors, and it could be me, put in just a simple request to the mayor and get it back in the streamline, that could happen. So why don't we get that done?
Great. We got a couple minutes left before we go to our next guest. The city book of city ordinances, to some level, is like the house that Jack built. By my count, there's 46 reports that are called for between the city charter and the book of ordinances. And I have to think that some of these are like the old blue laws. You can't buy a loaf of bread on Sunday stuff. You know, at what point do we kind of, you know, clear the cobwebs here and get rid of the stuff that we don't need to be reporting anymore, and, you know, make the ordinances fit what it is we're charged with doing? You know, streamlining government. It's the Ronald Reagan thing of, you know, look at everything that we regulate people to do, and give me a rationale why we should still do this. I mean, is
it's a great question. I think it's really a broader question, though. It's sort of a charter reform question. Like I've proposed anyway, and I'm, you know, trying to build some consensus among the council, but a more significant charter reform as to how long the mayor's term is, and maybe staggering city council's term between ward and at large councilors. And I think charter reform is something that's a very large undertaking, and it would be something that we needed to spend a great deal of time on. And when we do something that's very significant and meaningful, like what I propose, I think we should attach on things that we shouldn't be even looking at anymore, like you're suggesting now. Like you say, blue laws, things that, you know, have gone by the wayside because we do things electronically now, or because of the public record laws, everything's already available to people. You know, they don't necessarily have to report them.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think there's a lot of that. And I think what happens when the state passes, you know, the public records laws and the open meeting laws and things like that, a lot of those types of requirements got replaced by virtue of the new statutes.
Yeah.
And nobody really thought to go back and erase the old ones. So, you know, it's something we should take a look at, but I think we should take a look at it while we're doing a broader charter reform, because that's something that is, I think, sorely needed in a lot of places, and we don't want to do the work twice.
That's
so
right.
Let's do it all at once.
Great. Well, I want to thank you for having being a guest on Trending Now with Josh Arnold. I know you have a boat cruise going out tonight, and I wish good weather and good sailing, and hope
you
fare well in your next election.
If anybody would like to join us, 7 o'clock on the Gloucester fleet. The boat's called the Lady C, leaving from Cape Ann Marina, and it's just going to be pizza sandwiches, some dancing, some music, and some fun. So I'd love everyone to come kick off my reelection campaign and celebrate my birthday.
Great. Take care. Thank you.
Thanks, Josh. Bye-bye.
People come in, take a seat. You're really in for a treat at Sylvan Street. A great place to eat and drink and meet with family and friends at Sylvan Street. We treat you right, day or night. Satisfy your appetite. Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Catch a game with friends, meet for lunch, cocktails after work, or a romantic dinner for two. Whatever your plan to do it at Sylvan Street Grill in Peabody and Salisbury. See you at Sylvan Street.
Eat, drink, and chill at the Sylvan Street Grill.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. If you're replacing the windows in your home, please see the Anderson 400 Series windows on display at any of our three locations in North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire. The Anderson 400 is attractive, durable, energy efficient, and reasonably priced. Remember, Anderson is the most trusted name in windows. See the Anderson 400 at any of our three locations. That's North Reading, Beverly, or Plaistow, New Hampshire, or at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
NSONewsSports.com is known for connecting North Shore sports fans with local sports newsmakers. Features on teams and players. Exclusive video interviews following the big games. Live event coverage such as high school football, basketball, hockey, and baseball. Live video coverage of the Gloucester Fiesta. MSO also connects you to the area news leaders. Mayors, state representatives, state senators, town administrators, city and town elected officials, business leaders, and more. Entertainment features. Follow us on Twitter or Facebook at MSO News Sports. Email us at msonewsports@gmail.com. Leave a voice message anytime, 978-325-3638. Stay connected to your North Shore neighbors by simply clicking on msonewsports.com.
Well, it happens sometimes. Sometimes we don't get who we want to connect with. And that stuff looks like Pine Sol. You're drinking that?
Yeah, it's
Lysol.
It's diet iced tea. Yeah.
Gross. Yeah. All right. So anyway, you have been working diligently to put all these files together on people's names and dates and how much money they make and who does what to who and so on. So tell me about this thing now you have a new venture going on.
Well, yeah, I've worked for political candidates for well over 30 years, and a colleague and friend of mine from Rotary, who happens to run a printing company, and I were talking, and we decided to combine forces and put together an entity, really, that looks at how we could take the combined knowledge of several people and apply it to either political campaigns or non-profit organizations. So if you dig deep in through the state records or local records too, you can compile listings of all the people who've given money to political candidates or causes or so forth. So that's what we've been doing, mining data and other things too, like, for example, who voted in different elections and what is the composition of the voting electorate in terms of people who vote in municipal elections versus state races versus presidential races. Having that data also allows you to do public opinion polling. We're looking at doing... selling for lack of a better term, a la carte offering of services and products that people either seeking re-election or public office for the first time or coming back into the political arena can use to help further their campaign, as well as people who are in a nonprofit organization.
Okay, so how do candidates, you've been talking with candidates, we've got a lot of them that you've spoken with in the last few weeks, and actually over the last few years, how do they get a hold of you or your business?
Well, they can certainly call me at 978-559-9480, it's my cell, and Josh Arnold at Verizon.net works as well. We do have a Facebook page that's up, just Arnold and Gardeners and Associates. But there are lots of different pieces of that that we think are going to be helpful. For example, social media. Everybody that's in nonprofit or in elective office or seeking elective office wants to have a social media presence, but they don't all know how to do it. They don't all know how to maximize the return. How do you use social media, for example, to get your message out if you're running for election or post-election? And how does your campaign of conveying information differ in a pre- versus post-election era? How do you use Facebook to get your vote out on election day? I mean, the technology continues to change. And you know, one of the things with polling is, it's not as easy as it used to be simply because everybody has cell phones. So you've got to drill down deeper to get the right information to contact people in order to do a public opinion poll that makes sense, that is verifiable, that has a validity test to it, not something that somebody took off the internet and said, oh, well, this guy's going to win, or this lady's going to win by 60%, and it's really neck and neck. So there's a lot that goes into it, but we expect to have several people on board that will be able to advise candidates or nonprofit organizations on developing and executing their social media plans.
Well, there's a lot to that, and ethics has not caught up with technology yet. So the social media, I got to tell you, personally, it makes my skin crawl. I never put anything out on, for example, Facebook, just to name one, that is private. It's always something to do with the business. And I troll Facebook looking for news tips.
Yeah.
There is a tremendous amount of advertising on Facebook that is valuable, of course, and it's easy to navigate. But the problem with that is, as you say, there are more people who don't understand the consequences of Facebook than who do. And it's good that you can point that out, because there are many, many pitfalls with Facebook that, you just don't even realize that they are there. I So good luck with that. I think that that's a valuable service when you can guide people, especially if you understand what polls are, because scientific polls require a vast knowledge of statistics and mathematics to do it correctly.
You have to be statistically correct, but you also have to have a methodology to validate it. So if I'm polling a Gloucester poll and you come up in the sequence of call-ups, I'm going to ask you a test question. And then, it might be, did you vote in the last presidential election? I then have to go back and look at the last presidential election and see if you voted. And if you didn't, I can't include your response.
And that's one aspect of it. You are right.
And if you don't do that, mm-hmm. you end up with a skewed poll.
Well, we had in a city on the North Shore recently, not in the not-too-distant past, there was, what was it called? I think it was called a survey. And surveys come under that same purview as polls in terms of validity. There has to be a test of it. You have to test the test, in other words, in order to see if it's valid. And there are tried and true scientific methods to do that and mathematical methods. But most people don't, including that survey, which had to do with schools. And it was just ludicrous on how people if he or she says it, then that's it because it's in the survey. Well, you can, as you well know, you can get a survey to construct a survey in such a way that it will get the outcome that you're looking for.
Yeah, how you word the questions and how you frame it, and then you can approach it from a manipulative perspective, and certainly people have done that. The other pitfall with electronic surveys is, do you have a mechanism in there that can isolate IP addresses, responses by IP address, so that you can't have multiple people from one single IP address respond to the survey to skew it in favor of a particular position. And that's, the average person wouldn't look at that. They may only look at the results. Sure. Well, 80% think that we should have this.
Mm-hmm.
And it may be more like 32%, but one guy voted 150 times.
You got it right. That's it. Well, all right. So, again, your address, how people can get a hold
Josh
of your
Arnold
service?
@Verizon.net or 978-559-9480.
All right. And the name of this organization is?
Arnold Gardner and Associates.
Okay.
Right.
All right. And sounds like a law firm. But it isn't.
It isn't.
Okay. Okay.
It isn't.
All right. So what do we have for possible future guests on Trending Now?
Well, we hope to have our fourth guest from today on in the future. That was Joel Favaz, a member of the school committee. I'm guessing something. He's an attorney, so something came up at the last minute. But Jen Holmgren is a candidate for City Council at Large in Gloucester. Ken Hecht is candidate for Ward 2 in Gloucester. Jamie Figueroa, candidate large in Lynn. Matthew St. Hilaire, a candidate large in Beverly. And Jason Silver is not running for re-election, but he is a city councilor in Beverly, and he is the chief of staff to State Senator Joan Lovely. And we're going to schedule him in somewhere soon. And then Tracy Valetti is Emma, executive director of the Atrium, and she's going to be talking on Verona Drive, and she's going to speak about dementia. I wrote the name down this time.
Okay. All right. Thanks, Josh. Appreciate it. Good show. We'll be back next Friday, of course, good Lord willing, and all that stuff. And don't forget, on Sunday, the MSO Music Fest, the Unfinished Music Fest with Greg Verga hosting, will be pushed back to 5 o'clock. It's going to be 5 o'clock instead of 4 o'clock over at Mile Marker. It might be a little bit later start than that, so don't hurry, but we'll have it. It'll be a full program with all of the artists still scheduled to perform at Mile Marker 1 in Gloucester on Route 133. But it's going to start probably a little around 5 o'clock or so instead of 4 o'clock. That's it. On behalf of Josh Arnold, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, I'm Rick Moore. Bye-bye. Thank you.